There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
107 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile. I'm Dalton Orwig, Jonathan McConnell, sitting in for Sean Sullivan on this fine Wednesday afternoon. First day of August. Can't believe it. Year's already flying by so fast. The number, if you want to contact us, 251-343-0106. That works for texts and phone calls. We've already had some really good phone calls this show, but a lot of texts that I haven't gotten to yet. So I'm going to go back to our first conversation at the beginning of the last hour. We were talking about the 3D printer debate that's going on right now. And one of the questions, I'm not sure if we answered this, but we have an answer now. A couple people asked this. How many people own a 3D printer? We don't know the answer to that. There's probably a lot out there, but not as many as the media probably wants you to think. But the cost of a 3D printer, this person says it's going to prohibit widespread use of a plastic. Another person, Mike here from Sip and Chew, he asked, what would the cost of the 3D printer be? And did you look that up, Jonathan? You know about the price of a...
It's about $3,500.
Okay, $3,500. So not cheap at all.
Nope.
To me, that means...
You got to print a lot of guns.
Yeah,
it would be... or you could borrow, you know, your company's 3D printer if you want to do it the cheap way. You know, it's not like there's anything wrong with printing a gun at your office printer, right?
Yeah, or your company's credit card and buying it off of that before they figure it out. I guess that's another way to get it done.
That would work.
Also, I love this text. This comes from a 205 number, and they say that McConnell guy. I'm not sure what part of the conversation upset this person, but that McConnell guy sucks. Let's just say that. Where'd you get him from? And Dalton, you suck too. So we appreciate that.
You know, awesome. I appreciate constructive criticism, and mm-hmm. I actually agree with you. You know, in a lot of cases, we're not that great.
We were talking about the crossing guards mostly and school resource officers. We weren't talking about crossing guards. We were talking about school resource officers and Governor Ivey's plan and Walt Maddox's, I guess, plan to keep it the same. But this person was asking, somebody called in and said maybe firing the current crossing guards and then rehiring them as trained deputized officers, I guess, and having them work as crossing guards but also be armed to protect children in the morning and the afternoon. Lots of holes in that argument, and this is one of them. How would this work? He mentioned paying the guard more than MPD. The crossing guards at MGM are sheriff officers, according to Supermom. Is it not like that everywhere? I've seen police department officers, at least at the school on Cottage Hill. They're there in the morning and then the afternoon. And I've also seen some crossing guards that appear to just be crossing guards and nothing more. And I personally don't know how I would feel about those crossing guards, you know, being handed weapons. They don't seem like maybe the most athletic or sharpshooting people in the county.
They do have amazing gloves, though. If you've seen those gloves, like the stop in, on the stop sign on the palm, but yet the fluorescent fingers, like it's amazing. I mean, could you imagine shooting somebody the bird with those gloves on? I mean, it's like, wow, yeah, they really hate me. That's great.
Yeah, actually,
that's the 205 number guy.
Yeah, and this is totally off topic, but you just talked about shooting the bird as a crossing guard. I worked at McDonald's.
Where is this going?
I worked at McDonald's for a long time as a teenager and a child because my parents, they run some McDonald's up in Clark County. So, you know, child protection laws out the windows when your parents run the restaurant. But I was actually working as the Hamburglar outside of the restaurant. I had the sign and everything trying to bring people into the McDonald's. I was Hamburglar because that was the costume that I was made for at that time. That's the size that I was. I was a little bit bigger than Birdie, not big enough to be Grimace.
Yep.
And of course there's only one Ronald McDonald, and that's not me. So the fingers, the gloves that they give you when you're Hamburglar, and I think it's like this for a lot of different costumes, they only have four fingers. And I've always assumed, you know, it's just a cartoon thing, that cartoons just have four fingers. Well, I was out in Jackson, Alabama, in front of the McDonald's, with my Hamburglar costume on, the sign telling people to come in. I think I was giving out cookies to people, and this guy drives by in this truck, and he flips the bird out the window.
To the Hamburglar?
To the Hamburglar.
That is the horrible.
He flipped me the bird, and that's when I figured out why they put four-fingered gloves on you, because you can't flip them back off. So I went with the two fingers in the middle, and it wasn't the message that I wanted to send, because I didn't have five fingers in the glove, but you know, I had to veer off into that topic. I don't get to tell that story very often.
Well, it is an amazing story, but just remember, you always have the pinky, so when they don't deserve the bird, you just give them the feather, right?
Ah,
that's the way you have to go with that.
Man,
got to get creative.
If I could go back,
yeah,
maybe I need to dress up as Hamburglar once again, or Grimace now, the size that I am.
You know, the people on the radio do not know that you're not actually dressed as the Hamburglar right now.
Yeah,
so
I could be. It would probably
sound like this
if I was in the Hamburglar costume. Actually, if kids are listening, Hamburglar is totally real. Another topic on here about the school resource officers. So all these delusional people think that someone who is qualified to stand as an armed watch around children is going to be willing to work for only 3 hours a day. The degree of training people are describing is that of an active duty combat trained person. Even Mobile County would need how many of those officers? 20? 30? And you're asking these combat trained personnel to work part-time? These people have no idea what it takes to stare down the barrel of a gun and pull the trigger to end another human's life, but they're so quick to say, let's arm Martha, the 83-year-old crossing guard, to protect our kids. Get real. So far, I think that's the text of the day.
That is the text of the day, and whoever wrote that is the exact type of person that needs to either run the training program for it or be the guard. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about, is someone who has the mental ability to pull that trigger or to stand, to be the guard dog, to be the sheepdog, right? That's who it is. And you know, people don't quite understand that. You know, the crossing guard argument, it's, you know, from an efficiency personnel, you know, standpoint, yeah, that makes sense. That's what you're shooting for, but I'm not worried about efficiency. I'm worried about protecting our children, and that should be our number one focus.
Yeah, well said. 251-343-0106. That's the number to call or text. We can stay on the school resource topic. And we were talking about Governor Ivey, that school sentry program, where it's an option for schools that don't have resource officers. And how do you feel about possibly arming administrators or teachers? And another comment that always comes up is teachers are in schools to teach. They went to school to learn to teach. They're there to train the minds of children, usually. And most teachers probably don't want that extra responsibility of having a weapon locked in their desk. So I think that's another hurdle that'll probably have to be overcome. And your idea for having veterans or military trained, I totally back that.
Absolutely. And having a weapon locked in your desk, I mean, it shouldn't be locked in your desk. It should be locked in a fire, you know, a gun safe in the room if that's what they're going to do. Otherwise, it should be on their person at all times, and they should be responsible for it. That's kind of part of it, you know. But it comes down to, like, what is the solution we're shooting for? You know, we need to harden the schools as well, right? All these schools, and I think Walt Maddox may have mentioned this out there. It's like infrastructure-wise, schools for when they were built to let people in. Well, we need to fortify our schools and harden them a little bit to make, hey, well, there's one entry control point during the day where there's one place where every student can go in and out, or every visitor can go in and out during the day. We'll talk to you at the after the next break.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile. Right now it's 1:20 on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig. Jonathan McConnell sitting in for Sean Sullivan today. And I'm about to change the topic up just a little bit from what we've been discussing over the last hour and a half. And we're going to transfer over to this story that was big news just a couple weeks ago, and it's still in the news because there's still a lot going on. But the Branson Duck Boats, the Ride the Ducks company out in Branson, where 17 people dead after a duck boat crash on Table Rock Lake there in Branson. Right now, an investigation into the July 19th capsizing and sinking is being conducted, and a couple of the families are seeking $100 million in damages from the operator of the duck boat, and that Ride the Ducks company offered to pay for medical costs and funeral expenses for those that died in that awful, awful accident. And right now, here to discuss it just a little bit, and somebody who really knows a lot about duck boats, more than anybody in Mobile, and Scott Tindall with Mobile Ducks. We had you on right after this Branson thing happened. We had you on Mobile Mornings, and really appreciate that you came on then to kind of go into a little bit more detail. But we got you in today again to talk about this just a little bit more. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm always happy to visit with you and give the community an understanding of how we operate our company and why it makes sense for them to come out and ride us and enjoy what we call the greatest tour in America and what TripAdvisor has called the most popular attraction in Alabama.
That is that's quite the feat, and Scott, we're glad to have you here. So just tell us, I mean, how would you prevent something like what happened in Branson? Like, what steps do you take, and what measures do you take to prevent something like that from happening here in Mobile?
I think the first thing you have to do is, especially in a coastal community like we are, is you have to watch the weather. We know that squalls can pop up on us in a hurry. We know that the weather changes rapidly. Here at Gulf Coast Ducks, we take a lot of preventative measures to ensure that we are operating safely, especially in regards to the weather, because weather-related incidents are almost entirely preventable. So we work with the Coast Guard closely, almost daily. Actually, we had a nice meeting with them yesterday to go through our operational plan. We also check the weather consistently. So, you know, one thing that gives us a benefit over, say, Table Rock Lake, which is about 20 miles away from where they do their ticketing, all of our ticketing is done within a quarter mile of where we sit. So we're using weather apps. We're checking the weather. We're also looking up in the sky. Our captains are also licensed captains with dozens of years of experience. They have to have at least a 25-ton license or larger. We give them the autonomy to lay eyes on the water. If they don't feel good about entering, they don't have to enter. There's a lot of times when we'll do a land-only tour, and then we'll just give our guest a voucher to come back another time. And they know it's for their safety, for the safety of our crew, and it's a better guest experience.
Yeah, what happened in Branson is absolutely unacceptable, and it's one of those things that just scars the industry for a long time. I understand how that happens. It's incomprehensible how that happens, and I think that's the best policy to have. And what else are y'all doing down there at the Ford? And what all do y'all have going on?
So along with the Ducks, we've kind of integrated a bunch of different attractions. So we have the fort that we manage on behalf of the History Museum in the city. We call it the Fort of Colonial Mobile. We also have a new restaurant down there called Sylvia's Biscuits and Po' Boys, and that allows us to give a full range of features for all of our guests. So they can ride a duck, they can visit the fort, see some of our colonial history. They can also come in and what we like to say is get a slice of colonial life, or a slice of coastal life, right? There's nothing more coastal than biscuits and po' boys, right? A little bit of Southern, a little bit of seafood.
That's
kind of what we do.
So, but you're located at the former Fort Condi, is that correct?
Yeah, we're right there at 150 South Royal Street, right at the corner of Church and Royal.
Okay, so do y'all rent that from the city?
We actually have a partnership with the History Museum on that. So the History Museum has a performance contract with the city, and then we have a partnership there with the History Museum.
No kidding. So it was something that actually made me think about is, you know, we've got all these debates right now about Ladd Stadium and what to do about that and how we should be able to keep both of those up and running, you know, while financing the new South Alabama Stadium, but also to keep Ladd Stadium and the maintenance costs up there. And I sit there and think about it. I'm like, how many venues in Mobile do we support that are not revenue generating, you know, or that are cash negative? I mean, you'd imagine what the Mobile History Museum gets, what, $1.4 million a year and has what, 4,000 guests is what they had in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the Explorium gets $400,000. Mind you, it's a private nonprofit. The Explorium is a private nonprofit, and yet it gets $400,000 a year from the city. Gulf Quest gets $2 million, and yet they'll see less than 5,000 visitors this year. And then Mobile Museum of Art gets about $1 million as well. And yet we want Ladd People Stadium to, they may have more visitors if they have a high school stadium, but why not let a private industry take that over?
Yeah, and Civic Center, the Mobile Civic Center, too. Don't forget about that.
There's something in everybody's throat right now, the Civic Center. Oh, geez, you know. Well, you know how to solve that issue is you just take the Explorium and you take the History Museum and you move both of those into Gulf Quest. And now you let some private developer come in and develop one of the nicest blocks in downtown Mobile. You could actually turn that into something. But, hey, as one of our callers said earlier, common sense is not a common virtue, right?
Right.
You know, hey, stop that making sense. You want to solve the Bayway issues? I don't know how to do that besides build a bridge, maybe. But one of the things you could do is you've got the I-10 bridge right as everybody comes out of the tunnel. And if I see another Texas tag slowing down to take a picture of the battleship without pulling over, I mean, well, they can't pull over on the bridge, but without exiting, you know what? just put a small wall about 6 feet tall to where no one can sit there and look at the bridge, you know, look at the battleship and take the view away at least until you get halfway down, you would solve a lot of that, right?
Yeah, I haven't heard that theory. I haven't heard that idea yet.
But, okay, besides being a 70-degree turn right, you know, in an interstate right before it goes into a tunnel, thankfully they alleviated some of the pressure with that shutting down that lane. But, mm-hmm. Let's preach some common sense here. I know it's not a common virtue here or really anywhere in this country right now, but, you know, why not? It seems like it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Scott, speaking of the traffic around town, when the duck boats are actually on land, how are they treated by Mobilians that are driving around? I mean, are you getting honks or anything like that? Or because I've been on the duck boats, and I was actually on the Ride the Ducks in Branson exactly a month before this last accident. Probably wasn't the same boat. I think they have 24 in the fleet, and they had two different areas where they set up on different parts of Table Rock Lake. And I was on the different trip than this one that went down on July 19th. But I'm just wondering, I know those duck boat, the vehicles can really go when they're getting on land. Do you ever catch any flack from people that are driving around?
We've got a pretty good relationship with most of the folks downtown. So they like to wave at us. They like to smile. Now, I will tell you that when we're going down Dolphin Street, I typically tell our captains just to take both lanes, just split the difference right down the middle. That way we're not trying to put the duck on one lane or the other. You do get some interesting interaction with some, you know, folks who may or may not be homeless, who may or may not be having the best day. So that happens sometimes. And just tell our guests, hey, look over here to the left and look at this beautiful building or whatever we have going on.
Is that something you've talked to the mayor about or the city about somehow mitigating the homeless problem?
I think the city is aware that there is a issue with homelessness downtown, and I think that my understanding is there's a lot of people that are looking at different angles of attacking it.
I'm sure that they just formed a committee in order to form a committee to talk about it, to make a recommendation to form another committee.
If so, I haven't been invited to those committees.
Well,
but, you know,
you've got to have the card-carrying member of the Communist Club in order to do that, right? We found out yesterday that there is such thing as a communist card that someone can carry, and they issue them online. But yeah, so, you know, Scott, all in all, it's amazing what you've done downtown at the fort. It's amazing to see your duck boats go by. Sometimes I love to listen to, you know, the renditions of whoever's the tour guide is and hearing their voice, and you're like, that's pretty interesting. I did not know that about Mobile, and I've lived here the majority of my life. It's a neat experience.
Well, the fun part of those folks telling the stories is they are great storytellers, but they're also U.S. Coast Guard certified deckhands. And that's one of the big differences in what we have and maybe what happened in Branson. Along with our captains, we always have a deckhand on board. In the event of an emergency, they're highly trained, they're highly prepared, and they're ready to step in any case, as unlikely as it may be.
And it appears that was a major issue on Table Rock Lake. As when I was on the boat, I can't remember what all they said they were certified for and what licenses they had. They did go through what licenses they held to be able to operate that, but seems like their crisis management may have been the major issue in this awful accident, because one woman who lost, unfortunately, her entire immediate family and grandparents, uncles. She lost 9 members in her family in all. But she said, you know, before the ride, they told them about the life jackets, that they had plenty of them. But when it actually came down to it, they didn't tell anyone to put the life jackets on. They weren't really providing any extra assistance. So to have really experienced guys, you know, running the show, I think that would make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think in the event of an emergency, you want as many people as highly trained as possible, so that someone can step in if someone else is freezing, right? And so you want to give your guests as many opportunities as possible. They shouldn't have to wait on you to don their life jackets. I think Mobilians and locals here are pretty well aware of spending time on the water.
Mm-hmm.
We tell our guests, if you want to put your life jacket on, put your life jacket on. You don't have to wait on us to tell you, you know, whatever's going to make you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great advice. And I think that you know, it's positive all around. It's a wonderful experience. If it's not something that you and your family have done, they definitely need to get out there and do it, and go as many times as you can. Well, we'll talk to you at the next half of the hour.
Thanks.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, he got half of that right. This is Midday Mobile, but this is not Sean Sullivan. I'm Dalton Orwick. Jonathan McConnell's here, sitting in for Sean Sullivan. Sean will be back very, very soon. But right now it's time to talk to Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. Hey, Angelo, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. And I'm looking at the calendar, and I've heard a lot of people talking recently. I guess, is school on the way? Is school starting soon or something?
Yeah, it's getting real close. Usually second week in August, somewhere thereabouts, is when school starts to kick up. And a lot of people start to stress about school clothes, school supplies, books, and all those things because, you know, they don't give that stuff away. Oh, that stuff costs a lot of money. So what we've actually noticed here at the shop is a lot of folks that have gold and silver coins, maybe some old jewelry from grandma or something that they're not using anymore, they can bring that by the coin shop and we'll make an offer on it right then and there, and they may be able to get the kids into school without any money out of pocket.
And on the other side of that, I know you have a ton of great jewelry in there, and I'm thinking maybe somebody sending their daughter back to school. I've bought jewelry at Mobile Bay Coins for my wife, some awesome looking jewelry, and that wouldn't be a bad back to school gift for somebody's daughter. And then you have tons of stuff for daughters and sons, just cool stuff you have there at Mobile Bay Coins.
Well, we certainly do, everything from sterling silver bracelets and earrings and necklaces that start off around $12 or $15, some really cool coins, including just got some new Darth Vader coins in. Those are really awesome. And like you said, those open L pocket knives are always a hit. You may not want to take those to school,
but it may
be a good school reward, right?
That's right. And if somebody would like to come on down to Mobile Bay Coins, how do they get in touch with you and how do they show up at your front door?
Yeah, they can always call us at 251-725-1590. Show up at Midtown at 2204 Government Street or go on to Facebook, like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
Hey, Angelo, we appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too, guys.
That's Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins, and back to Midday Mobile right now. And we've discussed a lot of topics over the last hour and a half, Jonathan, but right now we have Scott Tindall from Gulf Coast Ducks in the studio with us. And continuing the conversation, we've been carrying on.
You know, one thing I did want to actually bring up is, you know, we were talking about the Carnival Triumph earlier. You know, the Carnival Triumph was one that came in 2013, and on Valentine's Day that was full of passengers that were a little dirty.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they lost power 5 days out, and then were without power for 5 days, and they rolled in on the evening of Valentine's Day, which made my Valentine's Day for the 2013 and probably the 2000, well, until I got married in 2016 year. That was made my life. It was pretty amazing up until that point, or my Valentine's Days for that up until that point. But so what do you do when you see a cruise ship? You know, Scott, do y'all get much traffic from cruise ship personnel? Do you see one out there? How far off? And what do y'all do?
Well, I like to tell people all the time, if we have captains that are pretty good negotiators, and so they've actually negotiated a rate where we can ride for free on the Carnival if we let them ride for free. So if we vanish for 2 weeks, come back with a good tan, we're probably just hanging out in Mexico. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, you're going to actually have to hire me as security if you end up doing that, because I'll end up going with you, okay?
I could use the help.
You know, what about other chartering opportunities? I know that y'all did go down and y'all did some great work down in Houston, but has anyone ever approached you about the I-10 traffic on, you know, about the Bayway Bridge? You've been like, hey, listen, if you just get me around this thing, I'll charter your entire boat for a couple $100. Take me to Fairhope now.
Well, you know, the fun thing about that is we only do 5 knots, so it would be quite the commute across the bay. But I think that's a great question. When we go to building this bridge, and it's going to be a 6-year, 8-year process, we're going to have some kind of workaround around this. Now, I think we should call Elon Musk, see about getting the Hyperloop put in.
Yeah.
You know, that'll solve our problem pretty quickly. But I do think it's a concern that people are going to have to think about. The duck probably isn't the answer, but there is going to be some kind of solution that has to take place for multiple years, because traffic is not going to get any less. Now, one thing to look at is, with the rate of the improvement of autonomous cars, by the time this bridge gets finished, we may not even need it, because we'll have autonomous cars that zip us around anyway.
Well, you know, in Uber has a solution that's, you know, where they're starting kicking off in Dallas, I believe, to kick off in 2020, where they are going to be using air power to move people around.
Wow.
It's actually pretty amazing. It's where they're using a series of helicopters where they move from pad to pad, and where you would say, okay, I want to go from Mobile to Fairhope. And you could do it by car, but if they could also source it by, you know, by air, they'll do it by air. So I tell you what, sign me up right now. I'm moving to Fairhope. I'll see you guys later if I can beat that traffic.
I wonder where that threshold is, because Scott, I've been that's kind of been one of my thoughts on this the bridge. By the time they get it built, what are vehicles going to be at that point? Because there's been so many technological advances, and the last update, they said it'll be at least 2025 before the Bayway Bridge project's finished, and I think that's still probably a pretty, you know, pretty high bar to
cross. That's super aggressive considering we haven't really broken ground yet. But I think one of the things that I like to think about is how do we solve problems using 21st century solutions, not 20th century solutions. So what we're talking about here is traffic gridlock. This has been around for 50 years. But what we're thinking about is the way that we used to solve these problems rather than the way that we should be solving these problems. And I understand it's very complicated because you're looking at a hybrid of local, state, and federal money. And anytime you do that and get the government involved, it's going to get convoluted and we're going to regress. But if you look at the work that Uber's doing, you look at the work that Lyft is doing, you look at the type of work that Elon Musk is trying to do with the Boring Company and with Hyperloop, there will be solutions that are out there that will exist that by the time we get finished with this bridge, we'd have thought, well, why didn't we think about something else?
Absolutely.
And the answer may, there's a million reasons why we can't get it done. But what I always like to think about is when someone tells you what can't be done, that's really an example of their own limitations, not yours.
Absolutely, it is. And, you know, I will say this. I love Elon Musk's naming of the Boring Company. I also love his their creativity with naming when they first started SpaceX and NASA really hadn't given them much credibility. They named a communication device the Cuckoo device. And the whole reason they did is because they knew that once they figured out how to do something that was better and that NASA was going to have to adopt it, then NASA would be sitting in meetings saying, Cuckoo, yeah, and so the Cuckoo. And so it was kind of a joke that they ended up playing on everybody else. The personality of Elon Musk is something I think is a little bit abrasive, which is absolutely hilarious. It's my type of personality. I love it. Something that annoys people maybe. But I love what SpaceX is doing. I love what he's doing at Tesla. I love what he's doing with the Boring Company. And I think that is the solution in the future for possibly solving what we've got over in transportation needs.
Well, go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, you're talking about Elon's personality. I mean, you look at great entrepreneurs, most of them are not the easiest guys to get along with, right? Because they're pushing forward harder, faster, and for a lot of people, that's uncomfortable. And so that's where progress comes from, though, is living on that edge. And, you know, I don't mind living out there on that edge sometimes, too. And I know you do the same thing, and we learned a lot of that at the same time.
Yep.
And you just can't be concerned about the greater opinion of everyone. If you're doing what you think is the right thing and you've built a great team to go solve the problem, then you just go out and solve the problem.
Well, and that's what's interesting. Like, you know, for example, Richard Branson, everyone, actually, he's a lot more likable. A lot of people love him and his philosophy. But, you know, every time I read the Carnival incident, you know, when the Triumph came into Mobile, there was hardly anybody from Carnival there to greet them. You know, there wasn't, the CEO was not there.
Mm-hmm.
Had that happened with a Virgin Cruises, if there was such a thing, then I can guarantee you that Richard Branson would have been there in greeting each one of them personally and said, hey, I'm so sorry, while probably giving each one of them a fifth of Jack or something like that or whatever his drink was.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Richard Branson. He actually just christened what he's calling the Crimson Lady. It is his first cruise ship in Virgin Cruise Lines. He's starting one.
No kidding.
Saw that in the news just the other day.
Oh, wow.
Well,
get him in Mobile, right?
Yeah. Sandy, why don't you recruit them in?
Yeah,
I'll fly to the Caribbean to meet with Richard Branson if that's what it's going
to
take.
Yeah, and I'll go to the island. Yeah.
One of the things about Elon Musk and so many of these entrepreneurs, but specifically Elon Musk, is all these deadlines that he set for himself, you know, years ago, whether it's Tesla, SpaceX, the Boring Company, and wasn't he selling flamethrowers there? He probably still is selling those flamethrowers that were out on the market for a little bit, but he sets those deadlines for himself and makes it so difficult for his company. But that's part of aiming high, like you were just talking about, and you two, both successful businessmen, I imagine that's a big part of it, is setting deadlines, and then even if you don't reach it, you're farther along than if you had made it easy on yourself.
You know what's amazing about that is that he'll set a deadline, and I just finished reading a book about Elon Musk, and it was saying that he'll set a deadline, and if you tell him you can't meet it, he will fire you or move you off the project onto another project, and then he'll say, fine, I'm the CEO of this project, and he'll take it over and he'll meet the deadline and exceed his own expectations. I mean, but now he will work day and night to do that, but he just expects such a high level out of every single person. That those are the type of people that are going to build, you know, life beyond the planet. They're the ones who are going to be like, hey, you know what? We can go and put a settlement on Mars. I mean, his goal is to die on Mars. That's what he says. He's like, you know, I'm not the first time I go. I want to go and I want to come back. I want to play with my grandchildren and everything like that. But after that, I want to go and I want to stay on Mars. And I think that is just something, a visionary in the United States that we don't have very often. You know, whether it's realistic or not, you know what? You aim that high, I want to see where you land. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, he's a fascinating dude. Like, no way around it. But one of the things that at least – his public perception. You know, he's out there tweeting, and they're in that Thai cave search, and there's a whole big dust up with that. And that's the kind of person he is. You can't, and there's so many other entrepreneurs like that that are just, you know, they're not like the common person. And I'm sure that reaches into he's probably pretty abrasive. I mean, you just got done reading the book with him, but when he was tweeting and providing some ideas for how to save those Thai soccer team that was in the cave, that might be his one of his blemishes, is how he talks with other people.
Oh, it's exceptionally abrasive, and people will tell you that work with him, and you know, to the point of where he has a really hard time relating to people, but he just has such a high expectation. But he's not like he's holding that expectation upon anyone. You know, he holds himself in that high of an expectation as well, and he gets it done, which is pretty amazing.
Well, and I think you see it in your companies, we see it in ours. I'm sure it's the same way in Musk Group, and you know, we learned this together when someone said, you know, if I have to do your job, then why are you here? And that's kind of that's the persona he takes with his employees. And you know, we're not near that harsh inside of our company. We're trying to build and grow, and we build it on this Disney model that's effort based. But you know, Lee Cockrell, who built the Disney Institute, was vice president for 25 years. He said, "Slow to hire, quick to fire." And what that means is, take as much time as you can before you add somebody to your team. But when you know they're not the right person for your team, you got to get them off the team. And that sounds like kind of Musk philosophy on, if you tell him you can't meet a deadline, you're not going to meet the deadline if you start with that attitude. That's for certain.
We have a text here from David. You just mentioned maybe getting Richard Branson. We were talking about that cruise line. David says, maybe you can meet with David Neilman at the same time you meet with Richard Branson, and you can get Moxie Airlines into Brooklyn Field and then the Virgin Cruise Lines in the cruise terminal. Well, I guess it's good to reach high, I guess.
That's what he was doing. All about it. If we can, as long as we move the airport to Brooklyn Field, that's all I care about. That's, at this point, that's my biggest goal.
Hey, it's on the horizon, or at least it looks like it at this point. 147 now on FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile. I'm Dalton Orwig, Jonathan McConnell sitting in for Sean Sullivan, and we got Scott Tindall here from Gulf Coast Ducks. We're coming right back right after the break.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
It's 1:53. This is Jonathan McConnell, host, filling in for Sean Sullivan with Dalton and Scott Tindall. We are welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. We've been enjoying our last conversation about Elon Musk and the innovations that are coming out there, and trying to think big. What I was trying to think about earlier was Uber Elevate. Uber Elevate is opening up in Dallas and in Los Angeles, and they were launched as the two launch cities that are there. But you know, you think it's unaffordable in order to use the helicopters and the aircraft to transport people back and forth. But the idea is, if it's going to save you time, if you were going to go from Northwest Texas near Conroe, Texas, and you were going to move down to Northwest Dallas, and you were going to go down to downtown, that'd be a 60-minute ride. Well, a 60-minute ride would cost you $100. Well, if they can get you to go into a helicopter with other people, and they may be able to do six people in that helicopter, that's a $600 ride. You know, that actually saves money. It's a 5-minute trip. So think about the opportunity for them to make money, but also too, where you're like, yeah, I'd pay $100 to be able to get downtown in 20 minutes. And the idea of it is to make it where it's seamless, to where you go on your Uber app and it says, okay, hey, we're going to be there in 3 minutes to pick you up. And maybe you're going to go via vehicle, or maybe you're going to take Uber Elevate, and hey, they're going to just take you to the landing pad. And once you land at the landing pad, it's going to tell you which car to get into from there. And it'll take you to the nearest landing pad to your location that you're going to, and then it drops you off. It's absolutely fascinating technology. It's been fun to watch it.
And you know, Honda's doing the same thing. They have a new aircraft that's a $4.9 million private aircraft. And this thing can move you, you know, regionally. So you could go from, you know, it may not make sense for individuals, but companies going in and buying these, or a company doing shares on them. You know, the transportation revolution is coming.
Oh, absolutely.
We just got to buckle up and be ready for it. But as a community, you start to think, how do we prepare for those? When we get into autonomous cars, what does parking look like? And how do you multi-use that space? What does streetscapes start to look like? And then we're using our cars about 5% of the time right now.
Yep.
95% of the time they're sitting idle.
Well, if we could get Zipcar. I mean, I love that concept in D.C. and in New York and in San Francisco. And when my wife and I lived there, it was amazing. And hey, if you just need a car, take a Zipcar. Or, you know, or Uber anywhere you need to go. I mean, becoming a city that's a walking and a pedestrian city is the way to go. I absolutely love it. Now, granted, you're still going to have to go to Walmart or you're going to still have to go to Costco. You're going to load down your vehicle there. But if you're using vehicle only 5% of the time, then absolutely, let's see what else is out there. It'd be pretty neat.
Well, I wonder how long it would take that Uber Elevate to get here to Mobile if they actually do start picking up extra cities. And I wonder, because so many things we talk about, Alabama seems to, in a lot of instances, come up, you know, last, one of the last states to take on these new innovations. And I hope that Alabama won't try to fight so many of these technological advancements until it's a detriment to the state. And I mean, we've seen it before. So many cities, when just Uber rides, when the cars were trying to come into the cities, so many cities fight that. It'll be interesting to see with this all these upcoming advancements whether Alabama will really jump in.
It is really hard to see how technology is a detriment to the state, but you're right, there are people who are going to fight it just because it's something different. And we've got to realize that change is not a bad thing, and change and innovation is something that's going to make us more efficient. It's going to be better for our country.
Yeah, culturally, the way I think about it when we talk about the state is, you know, here in Mobile and Baldwin County, we have far more in common with the folks from New Orleans over to Pensacola and Destin than we do with the folks in Pensacola and, I mean, in Birmingham and Huntsville, right? It's about trying to build this coastal coalition and trying to bring innovation through that, and then we're not as hamstrung as getting held down by the state. But I understand y'all know politics better than I do. And it's not always easy.
Well, you know, and you're right when you said that we've got to learn how to innovate transportation-wise, and we've got to learn how to innovate our workforce. We've got workforce disruptors out there through the form of Uber. You know, Amazon is a workforce disruptor, not always in the most positive way, but, I mean, I know our company, somebody in our company, you know, drove 809 miles the other day, going from Lake Charles to Houston to New Orleans back to Lake Charles all in one day because of meetings that we had. And, you know, after that, literally, I sent them to go get their private pilot license, and I started getting my private pilot license. We've got to figure out a way to move quicker and more efficiently, because hey, your time, that inefficiency is what's costing us money. That was part of the study that they did about the Bay Bridge. It's costing people every single day to be sitting there. So I think it's $600. It's absolutely phenomenal. But it's been a pleasure to be on here. We hope Sean is having the time of his life. We hope he's being safe as he's rescuing all the fish from the Kuna volcanoes. I really do appreciate that picture of him in a Speedo and in goggles that he sent of him. No, he didn't do that, thank goodness. But we do wish him the best. We hope he's relaxing and just enjoying his time off. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for listening to FM Talk 106.5. Check him out online at FM Talk 106.5. .com, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the week.